But first, we want to meet these lovely editors up here. All right, my name is Toni LaPopola. I'm an agent. I was acquisition editor at executive editor at St. Martin's Press and at Macmillan in New York. And I am a stickler editor, a very tough editor. And I hope that the lady sitting here, and I don't see any guys, are the same. You know that writing is rewriting, is rewriting, is rewriting. And once you get that done, you have to have it edited. And you want to choose the best editor for your genre, for your writing, for your style. And we're going to hear from these wonderful editors here, what they do, what they expect, and I'm going to and what they actually do, because there are different kinds of editors, and they will explain themselves. And so let's start on the end. Carol.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Carol Fuchs. I've been an editor probably for longer than I've been an English professor. So it's a very long time. What do I do? I work with almost every stage of a piece of writing. If somebody needs help getting started, I can help them organize their thoughts. I can help with proofreading at the very end. But what I really love to do is edit a book, work with the material, make sure that it's organized, make sure that the flow, the narrative flow, really tells the story that you want. I'm always very careful not to intrude my own style. I want to make sure that I maintain the writer's style. That's really, really important. And what I do is take what should be already good work and make it better. And I think that's the bottom line, is just make it better.
Thank you. Roberta.
I'm Roberta Edgar. I am what they call a development editor, but I also ghostwrite, but I also story analyze. Development editing is sort of like being a doctor, because you never know what condition your patient is going to be in when it comes to you. And sometimes I like last week I had a phone call from someone who had a very interesting story, but he didn't know he had an interesting story, and he had written this chapter about having a spaghetti dinner with his family, and I thought, oh, it's okay, but is that all you got? So I said, well, what did you really want? What did you really want when you started out in life? He said, I want you to make $100 million. I said, okay, and you really thought you would make it? He said, yeah. I said, well, you know, maybe that's your story. So so by the time we had finished talking on the phone for half an hour, he had a whole different perspective on his story. It was the same story, but the more he talked, the more brilliant his story was. And he's so excited now, because in one half hour, he changed the course of his book and probably his future, and he thanks me for it. So, you know, modestly, I accept it. And that's what happens, and that's why it's so much fun to be an editor, because you never know how you're going to help people realize their dream. And that's what I like about it. A lot of people find it hard. I find it kind of like a game. I see it as a game with a lot of puzzle pieces, and I have to put them all together in the way the picture says. And there are a lot of different examples of how the material comes to you, because sometimes it's almost ready for Flo, who does you know, copy editing and proofreading, and sometimes it really needs to be totally restructured. So there are all those extremes and in between, and very often I will take up most of them. So so it's very rewarding, and I love it.
Great. Ma'am.
Hello, my name is Laurie Gibson. I'm pleased to be here, and I just want to thank you all for taking time this afternoon to attend the panel. My specialty is copy editing, which I started professionally in 1994, so I have 21 years of experience. I started out as a newspaper copy editor and then switched over to books in 1997. I have a bachelor's degree in English, a copy edit, a specialized certificate in copy editing from the UCSD Extension Program, which was about 130 hours of courses and coursework. And I've also got graduate and undergraduate courses in journalism. That's my education, my experiences, hands-on in the book with the writers, as my colleagues have mentioned here, making things better. Copy editing includes making suggestions for improvement in grammar, punctuation, and spelling, but also noting inconsistencies in description, gaps, or areas where the flow could be smoothed out a little bit to have the work make a greater impact on the readers. I also do proofreading, and I wanted to show you my big proofreading book from 2003 is The Color Purple. This book, when I received this from the editor to work on, I cried when I took this book back. It was amazing to be able to have that opportunity to contribute to a book that has had such a major impact on American literature. And as my colleagues have mentioned here, I love my job. Thank you.
Faith. Flo.
Hi, I'm Flo Selfman, and my trajectory has been a little different from the people with whom I share the dais. I've been a publicist for most of my life, my adult life, I should say. And at one point, and because of being a publicist, I have to read a lot. We all have to read. We read publications of all kinds and looking for client mentions and client opportunities. So maybe 20-some years ago, I started noticing mistakes in some newspapers and magazines. I found a mistake in an issue of Life magazine, and I almost fell over because I just never expected to see that. And I found a mistake in an issue of Cosmopolitan magazine. And so I started collecting them. And, you know, you wouldn't believe it. I just brought a couple of them with me. But you wouldn't believe the files I have at home. And it broke my heart because they just grew and grew, and I finally had to throw some out. But what I've been able to do over the years is observe what the changes are and observe the kinds of things that people are doing wrong, including the kinds of the people who are being paid to communicate with the public. And I think they have a higher responsibility to be more accurate and to be able to communicate properly so that they won't be influencing the public incorrectly. I mean, there are things like, this is a screenshot from Fox News, and it says, breaking news, fire destroyed by home. Deadlines do strange things. Here's another article. The headline is meant to say Mississippi's literacy program shows improvement, but it says instead of Mississippi, it says Mississippi.
Oh, okay. God.
They're all over. I could do this for days and days. So I don't look for them. And then I started saving them. And then one day after a couple of years of doing this, I decided to take them apart and see if I could find some rhyme or reason to what I was seeing. And I didn't have cats then, so I was able to put them out in piles in the living room. Otherwise, you know, they come and dive in there. So I found about 10 major areas where people were making mistakes. And I developed a course out of it that's variously called Grammar for Grown-Ups or Where Do I Put the Apostrophe? And once I did that, I started getting work as a copy editor and proofreader. So, I mean, things happen. I don't look for this, but when I start reading a book and on page 7 there are 3 errors, I can't help it. I start putting sticky notes in here. And I covered up the author's name because I'm not looking to embarrass him or her, but I just want you to know this is what it is. So, you know, I can spot it.
Where were the editors? Where were the editors? Yeah. Where were the editors in the publishing house? Yeah.
That's a good question because I'm going to contact her. She's either going to hate me or I'll have a new client. So the other thing I want to take, so what I do basically, because I'm a publicist, what I'm editing, this is, you know, is after the content editing, the developmental editing. So for example, this is one of my favorite books ever. It's called The Everyday Space Traveler by Jason Klossi, K-L-A-S-S-I. And it is beautifully laid out book. It was Dottie Albertine did it, and it had an editor, Robin Quinn, who really organized all this material. By the time it got to me, I was ostensibly hired as a proofreader, but I ended up being a copy editor, and the author himself was really quite surprised. I have notes from him when I'd send him a list of things, and he said, well, you really know what you're doing. Oh, you're really good at this stuff. And I'll give you just one example. He had used, you know, the word scuba, like scuba diving. You know, it's commonly used now, and we just basically write it lowercase S-C-U-B-A, but he had written it with all uppercase with periods. And so I looked it up, and then I said to him, you know, that we don't have to do that, and he really appreciated that, but that's the kind of thing. But it will come to me after the editor has already been worked on it, so I'm sometimes the last person who sees it. Another advantage I have is because I'm a publicist, I can sometimes, you know, talk to the author about publicity, or can make some suggestions that would be relevant for publicity, and in some cases I end up becoming the publicist. So it doesn't happen all the time, but it has happened. It has happened. So that's what I do, basically. And again, as Lori said, you know, we look for consistency, spelling, grammar, usage, punctuation. For example, also, you know, sometimes an author will spell a character's name three different ways. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't. So there are all there. Those are the kinds of things that we do.
Well, I have to tell you that I sit. I don't have a television set. I'm one of those people who don't have a television set, but I see everything on my laptop that I want to see. But I went to visit my daughter, who has a 55-inch screen, and I sat there correcting grammar. Mostly, give it to my husband and I. You would never say, give it to I. And my daughter said, Mom, the language is changing. All right, it is changing, because what happened to who? The man that. Mm-hmm. We don't have, you know, we've made people into things, and, you know, so life, it is changing. And when we're dead, nobody will care. Oh, no. it just hurts me. It grinds me. It's like you might as well have put glass in the garbage disposal. That's what it sounds like to me. And I almost cried on Sherlock when Benedict Cumberbatch said, give it to Watson and I, because Benedict knows better. So I wrote him a letter. All right, so that's grammar, and it is changing, and we have the guards and gatekeepers here, and that's good. I want to read to you what editors in New York, the editors who edit the books and buy the books that we try to sell them, we agents try to sell them, this is what they're looking for. And if you heard this before, you can hear it again. I'm looking for well-written, vivid, voice-driven books in the adult, young adult, new adult, and narrative nonfiction books. Another one says, I'm always in search of the next big voice in romance, a distinct, compelling authorial voice as a strong narrative story. I look for solid, voice-driven writing that makes the author stand out from the pack. So my two regular editors, I would like Carol and Roberta to talk about, do you edit for voice?
Yes, absolutely. And when I said I try not to intrude my own style, I think really what I mean is I never want to change voice.
But if the voice is, can you tell if it wavers or it misses? Yes.
Sometimes a writer will start out really strong in a certain direction and then either lose the voice or change the voice. And it needs to be consistent. I'll put notes on the page, you know, either this or that. But right now you don't have either one of them.
Okay. Well, Roberta, how about, I heard about, young adult is really huge now. Young adult literature is really huge, and adults are reading that. And new adult, which means over 18 with sex, right? New adult. So I hear editors tell me, well, you know, adults write young adult, and sometimes the voice is not a 16-year-old. The voice is not a 15-year-old, it's an adult voice. So I'm turning it down because the voice is wrong. Do you ever get into anything like that where you tell them the voice is too mature, Roberta?
Yes, yeah, as a matter of fact, sometimes, depending on what you're writing, In fact, I was just talking to someone today where the voice she had, the tone, was wrong for the material and for the audience she was trying to reach. So I tried to discuss it with her, and I think she agreed that she needs to do some research, she needs to see what else has been written in her category and see how they approach it in terms of tone and voice. Otherwise, she's going to, she's going to eliminate the very audience she's looking for.
Right, right. And you don't want to get turned down. And, you know, as an agent, I'll speak for other agents, that you will choose as an agent maybe 1% of everything you're getting, and then you will sell 0.5% or maybe 0.25% of what you're sending out because of all these things. And that's why the editors are so important. I want to ask you, this is a general question for everybody. In today's, well, look, if you took a book off my shelf, a novel off my shelf, they're all marked up. I edit them. They're already edited. They're already published. But I find all kinds of awful stuff in it and that I don't like, and I don't like my writers to do. So what do you think, I'm going to ask all of you, what do you think in general of how books are being published and edited today, edited and published today, actually, in the big five? Let's just go with the big five.
Carol. I'm sorry, what do you mean by the big five?
Oh, the ones in New York that pay the money.
I think people are taking shortcuts. They're not really paying editors. I think it's just staff people who don't have any experience. I see so many errors. It drives me crazy. But I think it's just they're not willing to put the money into editing.
Someone else, Roberta, what do you think?
Well, I think that I think they're thinking in terms of their audience again, and I think some things are written for speed and for brevity, for a quick read, and I think and they're also reaching out to an audience who speaks incorrectly. So you have to, I think they have to consider, if my audience, if my readership likes to hear George and I, then, you have to wonder if they're going to use that for authenticity for their audience. And that's the sad part of it all.
That makes me ill. That really makes me ill. I'm not talking about correct grammar. I'm just talking about good editing where the author interferes and starts telling the story. Author interference. Where there's violation of point of view, which makes me ill. But I think that's because they don't know it. The young ones don't know it. But they can bring in the books that sell. A little story for everybody. Maybe you've heard it already. The last Harry Potter was the author sent it to Bloomsbury, her publisher, the eighth book. And she always expected it to be edited and cut. So she just wrote as much as she could and sent it in to her editor to make her date and get her next couple of million. And so, of course, the editor, now that was, of course, before we had digital, before we had Amazon and all that, it was because people would camp around bookstores at night to be able to buy the next Harry Potter. Okay, so say I'm the editor at Bloomsbury, and that Josephine Joe, J.K. Rowling, sends it in, and I have it on my desk. I can't wait. I've got the pencils out. I'm going to edit. I'm going to cut all the too long passages and get most of the adverbs out and stuff like that. But then the boss comes in, the head guy comes in, and he says, give me that. We're going right to press with it. Because we are paying interest on that money, and we've got to get it out. And they're going to buy it anyway, which they did. It was this thick, 800 pages. But they bought it anyway. And now some of the big authors, and I'll give you the name, Donna Tartt, the Goldfinch, which won the Pulitzer Prize, has adverbs in it that I've never heard of, like creakily. He walked creakily around, and then the next page, creakily again. But she has it in her contract. No one can cut and edit me. She won the Pulitzer Prize. I don't go by the Pulitzer Prize anymore. I go by the book of the, you know, the National Book and all that, and the book, the Man Booker Prize in England, because I respect those. But that's the way of the world, and we're all dinosaurs. I'm feeling more and more like a dinosaur. And things are just going to go along, and they're not going to be the way we would like them to be. Because the first thing I do when I get a manuscript, the first thing I do is, can I read it without noticing the writing? Or even pick up a published book. Can I read it and sink into that world of reading a book, that wonderful zone where you go when you're reading? Or am I aware of the writing? And more I'm aware of the writing. And it takes a really talented author with a good story to get you over that hump. Okay, I'm going to ask you some personal questions. No, not real personal. All right. Where and how did you train, study to become an editor? I'll start with you, Carol. And I don't want to hear English professor. Okay, I
but
want
that's, to. But that is a part of it. That is.
You
a part
edited
of it.
As a English professor?
I edit. I get student papers every week.
Oh, okay. All right.
And sometimes the errors are so serious I can't understand what the student is trying to say.
Okay.
Now this is at a low level. This is at a
right,
low
here.
Level.
Yeah.
But even at higher ends. There's still, I'm not a proofreader when I'm a professor. I'm not going to proofread my students' papers, but I fully expect them to understand how the language works and to know how to organize a paper. So, but I was editing way before graduate school, and I think it's just because I was an avid reader.
Do you think it takes a certain sensibility, too?
Yes, it takes an obsessive compulsive personality. So I can't read without a red pen in my hand.
I am a compulsive editor myself, and it's a tick. I can't stand myself sometimes. I have to do it. I have a T-shirt my daughter gave me that says, I'm silently editing what you're saying. You know, like that's like, you know, the
that's
I and
wonderful.
The me, like that. So, Carol, I want to tell you something wonderful about you, or tell them about you, and that is you edited a book of a client of mine, Robin Winter, yeah, in the Wait for the Shadows, Watch Out for the Shadows, something like that. And I had been telling my author, build up the young girl, Nicole, the young girl who would, to me, be the Nancy Drew of that story. And she didn't. She kept it the way. And then Carol became the editor for her publisher, White Whisker Press, and I heard back from Robin, well, Carol thought I should build up Nicole too and make it more Nicole's story. So kudos to you, Carol.
Thank you.
All right, my next question is, this is, how many of the books that you've edited have been published? Do not include self-published. And we'll talk about that if you want to. Okay. Go ahead.
All of them.
Start all of them. Every book. That's right, because you work for a publisher.
I forgot. For a publisher.
So. Roberta, do you work for a publisher?
No, I don't.
You're freelance.
I work
okay.
for myself.
Yeah, you work for yourself. Okay. Yeah. So did some of them get published?
I don't know. I've lost track of a few.
Okay.
Some of them, many of them are self-published because okay. a lot of them are memoirs and nonfiction. And,
okay.
That's what I've been doing mostly. I did. One thing, I did a very elaborate thing for Prentice Hall once that was for a postgraduate art book, but that's about as close
okay.
as I've come to that.
Well, it's kind of a mean question, but what I want to say then, kudos to those self-published authors that they got the book edited.
Yes.
Because
yes.
a lot of them, they put the end and they think, that's it, and they publish it, and they haven't had an editor. So I'm glad. Sure, go ahead.
I think these days a lot of people are self-publishing because it's so difficult to, and so long and drawn out and frustrating to have to go the route of traditional publishing. I know that's a terrible thing to say for people who believe in it, but I think sometimes there are alternate routes to the same goal, and I feel very happy for writers that have that opportunity, and I'd like to help them
sure.
do that.
Oh, sure. What writing books, guides do you recommend to writers, if any?
Good
Go ahead, Roberta.
Well, Robert McKee's book and John Truby are probably the most well known, okay. And I think they do the job pretty well.
Okay.
One is Story. The other was Anatomy of Story, I think. Okay. It's easy enough to find them on Amazon. Robert McKee is McKee, and John Truby is Truby, B as in boy.
Lori?
I'd like to recommend a book called Working Days. This is the journal that John Steinbeck kept when he was writing The Grapes of Wrath.
Oh, beautiful.
And every day he wrote a warm-up paragraph before he got back to the book. And it's a fascinating read to understand what he was going through as a person, as an artist, and somebody whose life was changing in the middle of this process. Once again, it's called Working Days, and it's a very quick read, but it can be very inspirational and insightful for writers.
Nice. Flo?
Yes.
Yeah. Flo?
I have a big shelf full of reference books, but the best reference book for me is the dictionary, and I keep a big paper dictionary near me. Yes, I use online dictionaries, but I use the dictionary. I use many other dictionaries, and so I have hard copies of all of them. I don't always use them, but, you know, music dictionaries, pronunciations, spelling, medical dictionary, cooking dictionary, because these terms come up all the time, and they have to be spelled correctly. I also use, I like a book called Write Right, WriteRight, by Jan Vinolia. I don't even know if it's still in print. The last name is V as in Victor.
Doesn't matter. It'll be on Amazon.
O-L-I-A.
It'll be on Amazon.
Huh?
You can find it on Amazon.
Okay. And she wrote another one called Rewrite Right.
Okay.
And I love those books. And the other one, of course, is Chicago Manual Style.
Okay.
And that is a big, thick, I don't know, 900 pages. And you really have to know grammar intimately in order to use
that
book.
You have to have good eyes to read it.
But the thing
you can get it on. You can get it on online. Just put in the word Chicago, and it'll come up.
You can do that. You can get a free Q&A every month from their website. But the thing to remember is that the Chicago Manual is the Bible of book publishing. AP style is different. That is the Bible of journalism. So the styles are different. When you're writing a book, you do things differently, and that's what you need to know.
Well, go ahead, Carol.
Strunk and White.
Okay.
And Diana Hacker, The Writer's Reference.
Oh, okay.
And that has Chicago Manual, it has AP, it has MLA. It's the Bible.
Okay.
Could I add one?
Sure, okay.
Any good grammar and style book, you should just have one. Go to the bookstore if you can find a bookstore.
Yeah, figure out lie.
Yeah, all of that. You should just have one so you can look these things up yourself. So that the more you can do before you give a book to an editor, the easier it is all around. You learn something, and it saves you time. It's time, money, because you're using less of the editor's time.
Okay, anybody who knows me knows there are two books you have to have. You can't even speak to me. You can't even approach me unless you have these two books. And this is, you have this for your writing before you hire an editor. One is Stein on Writing by Saul Stein. This is about writing, fiction writing, nonfiction, narrative nonfiction. He's one of the best teachers I've ever known. And by the way, Shelley Lonkoff is in this book. He mentions Shelley. And then the other one, which every editor, and I know in New York, haven't even heard of this, is Self-Editing for Fiction Writers by Rennie Brown and Dave King, which is a Bible for me. It is the most important book. It isn't grammar. It's how to write fiction and nonfiction. And let me give you a little example called Dialogue Mechanics. And this is something that appeared in the New York Times, which starts the chapter on dialogue mechanics, and it's Newgate Calendar of the New York Times Book Review. And it's about Mr. Robert Ludlum. Mr. Robert Ludlum has many peculiarities. For example, he hates the he said locution and avoids it as much as possible. Characters in the Byrne Ultimatum seldom say anything. Instead, They cry, interject, interrupt, muse, state, counter, conclude, mumble, whisper. Mr. Ludlam is great on whispers. Intone, roar, exclaim, fume, explode, mutter. There is one especially unforgettable one. I repeat, repeated Alex. The book may sell in billions, but it's still junk. By the way, I would love to be his agent. Okay, so Hemingway said it. You said, because it's invisible. Do you, as editors, ever make the writer notice that they're trying to make up affirmations with funny words, like he snorted? Yes, he snorted. Okay, Carol.
Yeah, and those will usually be notations that I make right away. He said, she said, that's easy.
Yeah, because they're invisible. You can't laugh words. You can't snort a word. How would you do that? You can't cough a word. Hiss. Okay, those are little things. And Rennie Brown herself is a great editor, too. I talk to her all the time. She's a Tennessee gal. She's funny as hell. If you ever want to talk to her, she would love to talk to you and probably send you some assignments. Okay, another question. Do you edit nonfiction? If so, what type? Do you want to start, Carol?
I haven't edited nonfiction for money. I've helped friends
edit
work, but
okay.
I have not.
Roberta.
Yes, I have. Lot of nonfiction. Including memoir. But I've done a lot of, oddly enough, this one most recent one is about evolution and God. There have been several about people born again. This is odd coming for me because I was born Jewish, I was raised Jewish, and yet all these born-again Christians come to me to do their books, which is a very interesting calling, perhaps, I don't know. But I've done that, and I've done quite a few other things that have to do. Right now, I'm working with a retired cardiologist on his book, how he's now retired, but he's looking back on his last 50 years of how the healthcare industry has changed and is an industry, and I'm actually ghostwriting it for him, but he's doing a lot of the work himself because a lot of that information has to come from his, from his background. So, but there are a lot of other things I've done. I did a book for a psychic. It's just a very broad range for me.
I see a lot of memoir. I see a lot of people coming to me as an agent or an editor with memoir, and I wonder if you would agree with this statement that a memoir has to tell a story. I said it has to be a movie. It has to be a story with characters, scenes, dialogue. Would you agree? Could you talk about that, Roberta?
Yeah, because I used to write screenplays.
Okay.
So for me, everything is in terms of screenplay. When I see an opening line, I have to see it in my mind's eye. And that's the way I tend to structure or see a book structured. I know that's a simplification of a true novel, but that is, if it hits all the right points, then at least it has the bare bones, it has the beginning structure down. And it's so interesting how very few people are aware, unless they're experienced writers, how important that first paragraph is.
Oh yeah, to draw everybody the grabber.
Yeah. So when you write a screenplay, they say put the very most exciting scene up front. And when you go to a James Bond film, I mean, there it is, you know. So it works that way, and maybe it's divisive, but that's no. what a reader wants. And,
yeah.
That's what I think you should deliver if you can.
Okay, for all of you, how has writing, therefore editing, changed for the 21st century and the digital age?
I get manuscripts through the computer. They don't have to mail them to me or drop them off on my porch.
Well, we can edit with track changes now, right? We edit right on the computer.
I don't like to do that.
Do you do it in hardcover?
I prefer to my edits on the page.
Neat. Hmm. I like that.
So I print it out. They send it to me, and then I print it out.
So Does everybody like hard copy? Does anybody like to edit online?
Yes.
Okay, the two of you, Roberta too?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's four. Okay, I like both. Because you know what? I can take the hard copy to bed with
But all the changes don't necessarily get entered and saved.
That's true.
It on hard copy. Personally, I used to like that better.
Do your cats get in it too? The cats get in it. And my dog. Okay.
I wanted to add, when I work on hard copy, I use a green pen because green pen makes you all feel better than a red pen.
So red line, no red lines.
No red
green lines, right? Yeah. Okay. Lori, I'm sorry.
Yes, two of my clients, one is Patagonia Books, based here in Ventura, and the other one is Stanford University, and both of those institutions publish books, and I edit books for them.
Nonfiction,
yeah. Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Flo.
Yes. This book had an editor for several years, and then I got it as a copy editor proofreader, and it got published. They credit me with actually getting the book published, but it's a memoir, but we call it friction. This one is new, it's a natural health. This one is a how-to writing book, the therapist writer. I was hired as a copy editor, but occasionally I'll get a book whose copy is so clean that I can't call myself a copy editor because I might only make one or two suggestions. This is a diet book. This had an editor. I was the copy editor proofreader. You may have seen Ruth outside with copies of it at the IWASC table. This one is My Healing Heart, A Life Journey to Find Love. This author lives in Chile. She had a career with the U.S. Foreign Service for 26 years and met a Chilean, and they've been married for 20-some years, and they live in Chile. But the interesting, one of the things I did in this book is that I really suggested that she have an index. This type of book doesn't always have an index, but her chapter headings don't necessarily tell you what you want to know. If you read the book and you want to go back to refer to something, this book needed an index, and she did put one in there. This one, Super Job Search 4, fantastic book. It's about the size and weight of a telephone book, 400 and some pages, and I proofread every word of it. Mm. And then my computer lost the last 90 minutes, and thank God I had been sending it to him in pieces, because if I had lost that whole book, I wouldn't be here because I would have cut my throat. And these sticky notes are not mistakes, they're just things I wanted to refer back to. And I also do, last thing I'll tell you, I also do tech proofreading. I work, and this is actually the client in this case who hired me, doesn't pay me, but who hired me is a graphic designer, and I really bless this man because he understands. Most graphic designers do not understand that they are not responsible for proofreading. And so he got this big international manufacturing company out of Germany to let him hire a proofreader, and he specifically did not want one who knew what they were talking about. Now, I do pleuro elastomers and all that stuff, but I've been working for these people for about 10 years already, doing tech, their brochures about manufacturing technical products that go into spaceships and machineries, heavy machinery and all that, which is really a challenge, but, you know, talk about versatility, I do everything. If it's written
Jewel.
In English. And not only that, you know, we have to know if something, the stuff that I get from the tech company is written originally in Germany, then somebody translates it into English, but it's usually a German who's a good English speaker.
Oh.
Then my graphic designer, he goes through it, then I get it, and three or four other people get it. So finally it ends up being in pretty good English, but I'm strict about certain things because it's going to be read by an international clientele. So I think, for instance, I might get away with not using the serial comma, but in this case I do because I want it to be absolutely clear no matter what country the person lives in who's reading it.
Oh. You know, I have to tell a little story about copy editors. When I worked at St. Martin's Press, the head of our copy editor department, she was interviewing for copy editors to hire copy editors, and she would spy on them in the waiting room. to see if they picked up their head every time someone walked by. They wanted someone who was focused, who could really concentrate. Wow. And that's what it takes, you know, for all those little things that you have to catch. I mean, it takes a saint. But you love it, right?
I call myself a professional nitpicker.
Right. Wow. They have to know dates. They have to know, you know, the Battle of Waterloo. They have to really look up to make sure all those facts are correct.
And even if you don't know it, you have to know enough to know you should look it up.
Yeah, you have to look it up. Yeah, so that all those facts are right. And then there's indexing, which I don't see a lot of anymore in the pump. They're sort of cutting that out. It used to cost $250 when I was there. They pay, you know, $250 for indexers. But do you see a lot of that? Do you still see indexing in nonfiction? Yeah, you do? And you work on it?
I do in the Stanford.
You do? Okay, yeah. Well, Stanford would want it. Okay. Yeah. So here's a big one. What is the most important skill a writer should develop, in your opinion?
What was the last half of that?
All right. What is the most important skill a writer should develop, in your opinion?
Patience.
The ability to tell a story.
That's it. Ability to tell a story. What else? I mean, they should have mastered their skills.
Right? Oh, I think, well, to me, dialogue is very important.
Okay, dialogue is really good. Okay, we talked about voice. Voice is really important.
Curiosity and hunger for knowledge so that you keep learning how to write better and better and better.
I highly recommend a new book. It's a nonfiction book by Elizabeth Gilbert, and it's called Big Magic, Conquering Fear, and she talks about it's not talent that makes the writer, it's curiosity that makes the writer, and that's how they get the ideas for their novels. I can't praise that book High Enough for Writers is her new book that's out, Big Magic. And Elizabeth Gilbert, Eat, Pray, Love. But the book is called Big Magic. It's a brand new nonfiction book from her. All right.
Can I mention one more thing? Because I
sure.
just finished a
book. Yeah, go ahead.
How to end your story.
Oh, okay.
How to end your story.
Good point.
I'm probably going to make some enemies here, but I just finished reading The Life of Pi, mm-hmm. and I loved the whole book until I got to the ending. Mm, and I was so mad. I felt like I just wasted all that time. Mm. In any case, the ending has to deliver. It has to deliver.
I worked at St. Martin's Press, and the editor-in-chief was also the CEO, Tom McCormick. And he had a couple of things, a lot of things that I learned from him. And he also wrote a book for editors in publishing because he felt they weren't that good and they were missing things like stepping out of a point of view, things like that, letting the author speak, all that stuff, instead of the characters. So he wrote a book called The Fiction Editor. You can get it. It's Tom McCormack. And he would always tell us at the editorial meetings that is, you know, okay, I just read the first part of a really great novel, and somebody else is going to get it, so let's buy it. He goes, well, everybody can start a novel. He says, they can't. Not everybody can give you a good ending. They can't give you a good ending, he said, and don't kick the reader in the pants at the end of the book. So good endings takes a very talented writer. And there's also sagging middles that we can talk about instead of having a good centerpiece, you know. And so he would give us things like that. Now, I called Rennie Brown, the writer and the editor of self-editing for fiction writers, which also goes for narrative nonfiction writers. And I said, what would you ask these editors? And she said this, what are the habits you see most often that make a new writer look amateurish? Do you want to start? No.
You weren't listening, Flo.
Okay, you
start.
No, I was. That's
all right. A couple of things that I see in my independent writer clients, when I ask how long the manuscript is, and the person will respond with a page count as opposed to a word count. Word count is much, much, much more important. Pages can be manipulated with graphics and things like that. So when someone asks how long your book is, give them the word count.
Yes, I heard that at another meeting here too. Anyone else? Roberta?
Yeah, I think we've already said a few things.
Say
that
some more.
Make that really hit that particular topic. But I find that that sometimes narration and dialogue are mixed up, that where certain things that should be said in narrative form are put into dialogue, and it makes it all very artificial and weighty, and you lose the reader. And then sometimes the setting is not clear in the mind of the reader. They'll describe a scene in very non-visual form, and it may as well not even be there. You need to have as we know, the sense of sense, and as Hemingway, I believe, said, and very often that's missing.
How about single-spaced?
Single
sending
space.
Things single-spaced, not double-spaced. That just marks you right there, single-spaced, as an amateur. I send it back. I only have one eye to give to my country, so come on.
The other thing is the copyright sign on every page.
Oh, yeah, the copyright. Yeah. So we're going to steal it, right? We're going to steal your writing, yeah.
Also, too much exposition.
Exposition, setting, the setup, setup. We don't have the attention spans for that anymore. Right. And I hear from my writers who study with me, but I have to tell them what's going to happen and why it happened. Say, no. They'll read it on the outside of the book. It's right there. They know what it's all about. Start with a scene. Write scenes. They don't know how to write scenes. And they'll bury the dialogue inside the narration, uh-huh. You know, instead of making separate. Yeah. Okay. So, I'm going to now open up to your questions. I'm sure you have a lot of questions. If you don't, we're going home. This is the end of it. Yes, first question, nice and loud.
I have a simple question.
I can hear him. I can hear
him. A simple question.
Okay. Sorry.
What are the charges? What are the fees? Required?
Shouldn't that be on your website? Do you want to talk about that now?
I don't mean your specific, what in general? I mean, it depends on how much you're doing. You're doing different kinds of editing. I mean,
do you have packages? Do you have packages, you know, where you do 100 pages? You know, there are different packages that you offer. These are the people not working for publishers, of course, but for individuals, yes.
Most of my stuff has been for a publisher, so I contract for an amount for the book.
Okay.
I'm not really able to answer this yet.
Roberta, do you have a website that tells your fees?
Well, I have a website. Actually, I share it with Flo, but we don't have package. We don't have rates on there, I don't believe, because each situation is different. First of all, I ghostwrite as well as edit, and some books are, you know, 100 pages, 200 pages, and others are 400 pages, and some require you know, a lot more work, a lot more development than others do. So what I usually do is read through at least the first chapter or two to get a sense of the time
skill
involved and the skill involved, yeah. And then we arrive at some fee. Usually it's not hourly because that is
How do you keep an hour? Yeah.
That's really not it really can be very astronomical if we do it that way for the client. But we usually arrive at a fair rate for the client because there are a lot more hours involved than it ever seems at the outset.
A rule of thumb, just to get a kind of an idea, is go to the editorial department, theeditorialdepartment.com, and it's Rennie Brown, and she has a list of what she does and what she charges. And that will just give you an idea. I'm not saying you have to go to her or anything like that, but it will give you an idea of what some editors charge, some by the word, so much sense a word, things like that. So, you know, you have to, and you can go to my website, you'll find it. But that's a good, you know, margin that you can see what the editorial department charges and the different packages that they offer. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Do
I'm
you
sorry.
Get...
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want to talk about what you charge?
Go
ahead.
Not exactly, but...
No, go
yeah,
ahead.
But how,
go
I,
ahead.
How I do... I will actually ask for a sample of up to 10 pages, and I will do copy editing and proofreading on those 10 pages, and that way I can give an estimate based on my hourly rate on what the entire project would cost. And it's just an estimate because sometimes I get into it and I find out that a lot more is required. But at least we can establish if it's going to be by the hour, or we can establish maybe a package price for the whole project. But I don't do it by the page. I do it by my time.
Okay, question.
I'm with her.
Question.
Okay. Are you editing... literary fiction or simply commercial fiction, and could you kind of explain to us what the difference is between that genre specification?
I do both. I do both. I prefer, well, to read, I prefer literary fiction. To edit, I don't have any preference as long as a story is told and told well. As far as the difference between them, literary fiction, this is my English professor coming out, it should stay with you. It should change you. There should be something in it that you close the book and you don't leave the book behind. If it doesn't stay with you, there's nothing wrong with that. One of my favorite books years ago was Scruples.
Great.
It was fun. It was not literary fiction, but it was a real good story, and I enjoyed it. I'm not a literary snob, but literary fiction should stay with you. That's what I tell my students anyway.
Could you speak to what the market is right now for literary fiction? Is there any hope there?
Yes, there is. I'm an agent.
Oh, good.
Vintage, Random House, they still publish. And... you know, there's a fine line. People say I write literary fiction. I go, show me, you know, because everybody considers theirs literary against, say, commercial. Okay.
Both of you take your booth down? Somebody's claimed you took your booth down and it's all apart. They gave you this and your stuff's over there. I'm really angry at the hotel at the moment. I just wanted to know. They said, no, one of the ladies came out of the room and took it all.
Do you want to go get your stuff?
Can one of you come with me for a second?
That must be your stuff.
Sorry about this. Sorry. Any more questions? We want to go home. Come on. Where are your questions? Come on. I'm sorry, Flo. Okay, we got one more. We got another question.
Yeah, the editors, when if I submit a work to you for editing, do you also do like designing of the interior,
no.
Or do you submit it to another person?
No, there are designers. You have
that's
designers
a completely different special
and thing. Formatters. There are people who format it perfectly for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we just, the words, right?
Working
we work
the
on
words.
The words
yeah.
of the manuscript. Yeah,
that's one of the things I actually wanted to dovetail in the question about ideas. What marks an inexperienced writer from one who's more polished and professional? Sometimes inexperienced mm-hmm. writers will think that they have to format and design the book, the manuscript, slide the pictures in, the whole bit. And if you're bringing it to me for copy editing, I just want to see a very clean, simple Word document, double space. you know, 250 pages, or I'm sorry, words per page. I don't need all of the other things because that... in the stages of production, those visual elements, those design elements come after all of the word work has been done.
And I have another question.
Sure.
What about converting an academic work like a dissertation into, do you want me to change the like text citation first before giving it to you for editing? Or can you do that, like remove the text citation and then do the superscript and then put them, the notes, create the notes, or
I'm not following.
That's okay. I don't understand either.
Like in academic work.
Well, if you have the manuscript, you mean you have a manuscript.
Yeah, I have like I have a dissertation.
Okay, but in manuscript form.
And yes.
Okay.
But with text citation, like in text citation, we enclose and if we do a quote.
Oh, yeah. It's a different the style of for citations. For an academic, you're using probably APA or MLA style.
MLA.
We would, at the copy editing stage, we would take that and basically transform it into Chicago style.
Okay, so the editor can do it. Yeah. We don't have to already finish it before giving it to you.
Yeah, but the more work you do, the cheaper it is. Oh. 'Cause it's less work that we have to do, so the price will probably be.
Okay. And if somebody gives me that one, I'm giving it to her. Oh. I never want to see another footnote.
I get novels with footnotes.
Oh, wow.
No, you don't have to do that.
Oh, interesting.
Any other questions? Any other questions from the floor?
This is a real quick one.
Sure.
I noticed that Flo, you have your website in the brochure. Lori, you're not listed. How do we reach you?
Come up and get a card.
Right here.
I'm also giving a presentation in Ventura on December 6th. It's from 2:00 to 3:00 at the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, and it's called Book Publishing 123. It's a 90-minute program that I've developed over the past 10 years
Where at what town?
2 to 3:30 p.m. What town? Here in Ventura.
Oh, Ventura. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry for the misunderstanding.
Okay.
It's an overview. It's an overview of the publishing process, and it's also a chance for writers to do some prompts to hopefully elicit some new ideas about the work that they're producing.
Is that the one on telephone?
Sorry?
Is that the one on telephone?
No, this is the one on East Main Street. Yeah, so it's about 5 weeks from now.
What's the date?
December 6th, Sunday from 2 to 3:30 p.m.
Any other questions?
I just wanted to add one thing.
Sure, go ahead, Roberta.
I wanted to address that question from the gentleman. Like as Flo said, everyone, when you submit to an editor, you usually submit 5 to 10 pages, mm-hmm. and they will always give you the courtesy of a sample edit, and that's how you decide whether or not they're the right person for you. So that's kind of almost like a requirement, and,
very standard, right? Yeah.
Can I add something?
Yeah, go ahead, Flo.
When you're having a book copy edited, which is usually it's one of the last steps before you publish. What I found, and I said it at the panel earlier today, a lot of people start getting down to the home stretch, and they want to get it, quote, out there.
Yes.
And they start rushing, so mm-hmm. they don't plan their PR early enough. They don't do the proofreading carefully. You cannot give me your 350 pages or whatever and expect me to proofread and think we're done. You have to get your quotes. You have to get your back cover copy. You have to get your captions, every word. You have to get your copyright page. Has to be proofread before that book goes to press. And I will give you one really hideous example. And if this happened to me, I was at we were at a party given by an editor, a very well thought of professional editor. And during the course of the conversation, he mentioned a particular book, and I said, oh, I'd love to read it. So he said, take it with you, give it back when you're ready. I started reading the book. The man was thanked liberally, effusively in the acknowledgments, and I started reading the book, and I found lots and lots and lots of mistakes, and I said, how can this be? And I thought, I get thanked in books sometimes, and I thought, if this happened to me, I don't know what I would do. And it came up later in the conversation that apparently he had corrected everything and it never got entered. Now, maybe he did it from hard copy. Maybe the author gave it to the publisher and the publisher didn't enter it, and that happens. Mm. So that's what happens. You have to have every word not only proofread, you have to make sure that the proofreading, that it gets entered before that book goes to press. Mm.
All right. Anything? I want to tell you the end. I didn't tell you the end of the Harry Potter story about Bloomsbury. The author expected the editing to be done, and it was published exactly as she had sent it in. She left Bloomsbury, and they had to start firing people because look at the income they lost. So look how important it is to authors who really want to be edited, and I think it's so important. So don't skip it. Even if you're self-published, please, and you take it into your own hands, make sure you use an editor. Okay. That's it, I think. Thank you. Oh, yes, Carol, go.
Just one thing. If you visit my website, it's a fairly new website, and when I got started with it, I was very gung-ho. And a few months ago, I got sick. So I kind of have not put stuff into it. But if anybody wants to contact me, I do check it, and I would love to hear from anybody, and I will respond to you.
And what is it?
What is your website?
Oh, it's the Word Doc, thewordoc.com. It's listed in the website for the conference, but thewordoc.com.
Do you have a question? Do you want to go up? Okay. All right.
Is just something that's sort of encouraging. I was working in Edinburgh, and I went down into a tea shop, and there was a blonde lady there with a little baby, and I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "I'm writing a children's story." And she said, "They let me come in here because I don't have any money, and they give me free tea." Harry Potter.
It was Harry Potter. It was like, oh, my God, that's amazing. Yeah, she was on the dole or whatever
it's
called.
Go for it. She was fabulous, yeah.
That's right.
There you go.
Absolutely.
You got to meet her. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. We're all a little dingy today. Anything else you'd like to say, ladies? Okay, I think we're done.
Keep writing.
All right,
please keep writing. Absolutely. Yeah.